And the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, Mr. Luis Moreno Ocampo. I think you've already succeeded. I think we can go home now.
Yeah, so. That's a good idea.
I'm Jane Wales. I'm CEO of the World Affairs Council, and I just want to thank you so much for being with us tonight. I'd also like to acknowledge two organizations that are co-sponsoring this program and perhaps ask that this microphone get repaired before the Q&A session begins. It's a microphone with a mind of its own. The Human Rights Center at UC Berkeley is co-sponsoring this, as is the San Francisco Bay Area chapter of the United Nations Development Fund for Women. So I want to thank them both. For those who don't know the World Affairs Council, our aim is to engage the public in an exploration of global issues and global opportunities, and we very much welcome your being here tonight. As you know, you hear us on Monday nights on National Public Radio. Jane Heaven is taping tonight, so thank you, Jane. If you want to direct your friends to this program, we did sell out tonight. Some of your friends did not get in, so just do direct them both to our website, itsyourworld.org, or to the KQED show. We've got podcasts as well. So I would like to encourage you to take advantage of the question cards that are on your seat. What I'm going to do is assemble them and try to ask the question, bunch them, and ask the sort of paraphrase them. So it may not be your exact words, but I hope I cover your meaning. While you turn off your cell phones, which is now, yes, thanks. I will just let you know, remind you that our annual conference, World Affairs 2010, is going to take place at the Westin St. Francis on March 11 and 12, and we're going to be focusing on innovative leadership in the face of multiple crises, and so I look forward to your taking part. That was quite musical. It's now my honor to introduce our distinguished guest. Prior to his election as prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, Luis Moreno Ocampo had a distinguished career as a prosecutor in Argentina. He played a key role in the precedent-setting prosecutions of the military commanders of the military junta there. This was the first prosecution of senior officials for mass killings since the Nuremberg trials, and these were his first trials as a prosecutor. Mr. Moreno Ocampo has also taught at Stanford University and at Harvard, and he's been in private practice where his focus was on anti-corruption measures and anti-corruption efforts. Moreover, he did take on pro bono cases. Among them was that he served as a representative for the victims of in the extradition of a former Nazi officer from Argentina to Italy. In 2003, Mr. Moreno Ocampo was unanimously elected first prosecutor of the International Criminal Court. The role of that court is to mandate an end to impunity, to investigate and prosecute crimes against humanity, war crimes, and genocide. In his role there, he has opened investigations into the Democratic Republic of Congo, Uganda, and the Darfurian region of Sudan. Moreover, he has analyzed other incidents, atrocities, potential atrocities or crimes that came under the jurisdiction of the court from countries like Georgia, Colombia, Kenya, Afghanistan, Cote d'Ivoire, Palestine, and Guinea. He's here to discuss his role at the criminal court. He's here to discuss the whole notion of the advancement of the norms that the criminal court is there to ensure take hold. So please join me in welcoming Luis Moreno Ocampo.
Thank you very much for your kind words. It's a pleasure to be here in San Francisco. I was in Stanford for some time, so I'm very glad to come back. As you say, I had the privilege to be the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court. My work is to investigate three types of crimes: genocide, who is an attack or with a goal to eliminate a group based on an ethnic group or religious group. Crimes against humanity is another crime we are involved with. It's a massive, it's a widespread or systematic attack against civilian population. And then war crimes. These are the three crimes we can investigate. The crime has to be committed after July 1st, 2002. And the crime has to be committed in the territory or by national of the state party of the court. And the other condition is the states, no state should prosecute them. So I prosecute them when no one else is prosecuting them. So that's my job. I'm very glad to be here because I spent 6 years and a half in my office. I arrived when the... I have six floors. When they arrived, were six floors empty and two employees. Today, I have 300 employees from 70 countries, and we are full of activities. But and then we have some cases in court, and I'm planning my last 2 years. And that's why I'm glad to be here to learn a little about what you are doing. And I had a good meeting with the students from the area, because one of the ideas we are trying to see is how the court activities could be taught in the schools. Because at the end of the day, this court will do a few cases. I'm planning to do three trials in the next 2 years and a half. So how a tiny court in The Hague could change the world. So as any court in the world, the court defines individual responsibilities. But as any court in the world, the court defines the behavior of political leaders, army, police, and citizens. And the difference here is this court rulings had impact in at least 110 states. That's the beauty of this court. One case in The Hague impact around the world. And one important impact is how to educate children, because we need the children who understand the concept, and then they will request to the leader to do something different. I was in Austria a few months ago, and the Minister of Foreign Affairs told me his problem was that he had to send troops to the border between Chad and Sudan, but 70% of the population refused to send Austrian troops, because they say, what do we have to do there? So we need the voters and citizens who understand the idea what is to be living in a global community today, no? That is the coin. You live in San Francisco, you live in US, but also you are part of humanity, and that is a concept we are trying to develop. That's why I was very pleased that we have this conversation with the students. Can you stand up? Yes, they are the students, okay? And following the... I have four kids. The younger is 11. And he told me that the school is boring. He's boring. So, he, last year, the last day, I told him, okay, you don't need to go to the school today. Are you crazy? Today I will go. What happened with you? Oh, today they will show us a movie. And then I let to go. So he explained to me, I had to use movies. So I have a couple of movies to show you, because I like to explain to you where this idea coming from. Because, in fact, this idea to have a global permanent court was discussed for the first time in 1873 and was implemented like 130 years later. Because that's the problem, no? Create a global community is not easy, it takes time. Basically, in 1873, one of the founders of the Red Cross said, okay, now we have international humanitarian law. Law has to be respected by the armies of the different countries, but the states are not punishing their own soldiers. So we need an international independent criminal court to punish the soldiers to be sure the law of the wars are applied. That was his concept. And in fact, the world was trying to do this after the First World War, and you have a Versailles Treaty saying that the Kaiser should be prosecuted, but Netherlands provided asylum to him, so it was no prosecution. And then you had the Second World War. And the Second World War, yes. So it was the beginning of the idea to have international justice. And I'd like to present a couple of short things about this. Let me. Ah, yes.
On August 6th, 1945, the bomb called Little Boy was loaded into a B-29 Superfortress. It was released above Hiroshima. Three days later, Nagasaki suffered a similar fate. An estimated 145,000 people died within seconds, and tens of thousands more would later die from radiation sickness.
Okay, 150,000 people die immediately in Hiroshima. And interestingly, why I like to show that, because in Hiroshima, the major of Hiroshima is the leader of this group of citizens, of the cities around the world. And the concept they have is not to protect Hiroshima. They are trying to find a way that no city in the world in the future receive an atomic bomb. So that is the concept. They are not protecting Hiroshima citizens. They are protecting everyone in the world. And that is the main concept of the International Criminal Court. And interestingly, in this country, this concept is clear. However, this morning I was in Stanford with my former colleagues, and international relations is wrong. U.S. protect U.S. interests. And that is the theory. However, as you see here, there are many citizens in the U.S. committed to promote these ideals in the world, not just in the U.S. And in fact, it's interesting because I will show you what countries are members of the Rome Treaty, and U.S. is not a member. However, 80% of the citizens committed with the ICC coming from U.S. So you are the leaders of the U.S. moving this idea, not just for U.S., for the world. And the other... I'd like to show this other. This is an excerpt of a film taken when the Allies took the concentration camps in Germany. And then you see a different form of massive extermination, not with the atomic bomb, but with management to commit killings. And this is showing the victim's side. And I'd like to show now, I have a short segment of the Eichmann trial. And Eichmann explained very well how this happened. And you will see it's basically a bureaucratic machine committing these crimes. And that is the problem with massive crimes, are committed by many people, and not all of them believe they are guilty. It's just they are little pieces of the machine. Let me show this excerpt.
תסכים איתי שמה שעשית באוסטריה זה היה למעשה כפיית היהודים לגירוש.
Es war eine gesteuerte, planmäßige Auswanderung und ich bedauere nur, dass diese Tätigkeit nicht während des gesamten Krieges bis zum Schluss fortgesetzt hat werden können.
Wovon sie die Wörter alle haben? בעמוד 736 כעל הגירת כפייה.
Forcierte Auswanderung hieß beschleunigte Auswanderung. Jawohl.
בהגירה זו הפסידו היהודים את רכושם כי לא יכלו לקחת איתם רכוש, נכון?
Das ist richtig, aber nicht meine Schuld.
בכל אופן, היהודים לא ראו יותר פרוטה מכספם, נכון?
Das ist bedauerlich, aber nicht meine Schuld.
ובפעולה הזאת של הגירת הכפייה היית בעיני הממונים עליך מומחה מוכר.
Ja, die Auswanderung ist ein ungeheuer kompliziertes Gebilde und da muss man sich schon auskennen, wenn man überhaupt irgendetwas erreichen will. Meine Aufgabe war es gewesen, die transporttechnischen Angelegenheiten so zu steuern, dass es termingerecht und dass die Zahlen nicht überschritten wurden, durchgeführt worden ist. Für die Räumungsangelegenheit hatten anfänglich die örtlichen Stellen das Transportmaterial selbst zu erstellen. Dies führte zu großen Wirrnissen aller Art und das war der Grund, warum ich nach Berlin befohlen wurde, damit dieses neu aufgezogene Referat diese transporttechnischen Angelegenheiten zentral in Berlin bearbeiten soll.
So. Basically, he called it immigration problem. It's nothing to do with killings. Okay, let me now show... That's it. I'm sorry, I did a mistake. So, here we are. So this is my mission, to end impunity of the most serious crime of concern to the international community, and to contribute to the prevention of future crimes. That's the idea. Few cases in The Hague, big prevention around the world. And what I like to do is showing this is the Rome treat the issue was discussed in Rome in 1998. It was adopted and they need 60 countries to ratify the treaty. This was achieved in 2002. So in 2002 they start to work to appoint the judges first, then the prosecutors. And since those days we are working. And the ratification keep growing. And that's what I'd like to show you, how this idea is moving ahead. It's moving, moving, moving. And you will see now, we're in 2009, and as you see, you have all South America, all the countries of South America, most of the Central America, Mexico and Canada in North America. Then you have all West Europe, almost all the non-Arab Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, South Korea, Mongolia. So that these are the countries who are members of the Rome Statute. And then that's an important point because the court is not a court. It's like it's a coalition of states committed to end impunity for these crimes, to prevent these crimes, and committed to support the court when the court intervene. And my responsibility, different than in Nuremberg or in Rome, after Nuremberg was for 40 years, nothing happened because the Cold War stopped the effort to create an international court. The Genocide Convention, adopted in 1948, decided that there was a need for an independent international criminal court. However, nothing happened. But at the end of the Cold War, in 1993, the Balkans conflict created the idea to create a tribunal for them and was created the Yugoslavia Tribunal. Next year, the Rwanda Genocide another tribunal for them, and then in 1998, the court. And the court is now is a reality with this global support. So it's a coalition of 100 states, committed citizens from all over the world, including San Francisco, and the court. And this is one of the most important aspects of the court. That's why it's not just a court. Armies all over the world are adjusting the rules to the Rome Statute. In Iraq, an Australian pilot refused to drop the bomb because he saw the situation on the ground was different than they were estimated, and then therefore the collateral damage was bigger, and he refused to drop the bomb. And that's a way to prevent crimes, to train people, and at the end of the day, the law makes a difference between a soldier or a terrorist. That's why we need the law. And this is for, I'm working basically in this fourth situation in the middle of Africa, connected with, who knows that was a Congo war? Who of you know that it's a Congo war? Raise your hands. Oh, most of you, wow. That's a very good way. Okay, very good. So, some of these conflicts are consequences of the Congo war, some of not. And this is the fourth situation we are working on. To select situation, what we do, collect information, we measure the number of crimes committed. So the worst situation was Congo, then northern Uganda, Darfur was worst. And we also measure the number of rapes and the number of forced displacement people. That's a huge issue, millions of people displaced in this conflict. Then these are the people indicted. Tomás Lubanga and Bosco Ntaganda, the leaders of the group in Ituri, and they are charged with the child soldier case. The picture is, I like this picture because it shows this kid with the Kalashnikov and the teddy bear backpack. No, the combination, that's the combination we see. And then here, this, another two leaders of the different militia who are fighting against him, who was killing people in a city called Bogoro. And then we have Joseph Kony, the leader of the Lord's Resistance Army, committing crimes in northern Uganda, now in Congo and Central African Republic. We have five persons indicted, two were killed. And then we have Jean-Pierre Bemba, who was the vice president of Congo, committing massive rape campaigns in Central African Republic. He's in jail also. And then we have Darfur case, we have President Bashir, Ahmed Haroun, Ali Kushib, and also Abu Garda, a rebel leader who attacked peacekeepers in Darfur. And the four persons at the top are in jail. Abu Garda, the rebel leader, is not in jail, but he is committed to come to the court to the trials. And I will not show that. Before I start my investigation, I collect information about crimes committed in my countries, in the countries under my jurisdiction. So I'm monitoring situations in these countries. 2 weeks ago, I requested to open an investigation into Kenya. But also, we are monitoring crimes committed in Georgia, Afghanistan, Palestine, Chad, Colombia, Cote d'Ivoire. And also, the RON are NATO forces working in Afghanistan. So we have to monitor what they are doing. Okay, these are, have some numbers of how the killings were going down. We can discuss this after. Something interesting, in a few years, political leaders all over the world are understanding the concept, are talking about this. Social leaders also, like Kofi Annan or Desmond Tutu. And there are jokes about us. For instance, this is a joke in Kenya. No, the Hague Express, I am the pilot, and in fact, we are going there. And more jokes about that. Something interesting, this is civil division demonstration in the camps of refugees in Chad, when we request the arrest of Bashir. But the biggest demonstration that we had in front of the court was this, from Sri Lanka. And interesting, Sri Lanka is not a state party, so I cannot investigate Sri Lanka. However, they came to the court looking for justice. And also similarly, the Palestinian Authority, this is a foreign affairs minister of Palestine and the minister of justice looking for our intervention. Also, it's not clear if we can intervene there or not, but they are looking for justice with us. And the last point is, she's our client. So why we are looking here? We are looking for her. She is from Ituri. She lost her arm, he lost her leg, she was raped, she's not eating well, and no one is protecting her. That's why we had to work for her. So that's what we are doing. But all the work we are doing will be no meaning if these kids are not well-educated understanding this, because Discord is for them. I believe the new world is different. These kids born global. I have a group of students from Cambridge and London School of Economics who came to my office because they are trying to support my activity, and they were trying to film me. And so they film for YouTube. And the question, no journalist made this question to me. They asked, the question was the following. Can you explain to us what happened with a 20-year-old person in Darfur? So for this new kid, for these kids, their group is not about nationality. In fact, there were three ladies, one from China, from Netherlands, and from London. The issue was about their age. If you see Facebook, it's about people's same age. So I believe that's why the global communication provides us a new identity. It's not just about my neighbor, my city, it's about my age. And that's why I believe what we have to do is build a system to protect our kids in the future. And that's why I'm happy to be here and work with you. So, question for me, half hour.
When you came to the court, you promised a sexy court. What did you mean?
No, this is not true. Some people who criticize me say that, but I never say that. That's what some people who criticize me say about me. Not true. I never promised a sexy court.
Put differently, how important is it that the kinds of cases that are prosecuted are understood by and known to victims?
Crucial. Crucial. If I just convince the judges and no one else knows, what's the meaning of that? I told the students the story. That's something I learned in my country when I was doing the Junta trial, doing the investigation. I was going to the house of my mother the weekend, and I explained to her I was investigating these crimes. And my mother was thinking I was crazy. How can I investigate General Videla, who's a nice person? So she was furious with me. And she said General Videla was protecting us from the guerrillas. He's a nice person. It's wrong. What you're doing is wrong. So I convinced the prosecutor of the case that we had to focus not just in the judge. We had to explain to people like my mother that we are right. And my mother, watching the TV a little and reading the newspapers, after 2 weeks of the trial, she called me and said, "I still love General Videla, but you are right. He has to be in jail." And that's it. So it's about the law, not just for the judges, the law for the citizens. And that's why we need to explain what we are doing much better than what we are doing.
And you described in your remarks the goal of preventing future
yes.
such crimes. At what point do you know that you're successful in a deterrent role?
No, I have this number. It's very complicated to measure yet, because we are a piece of the system, but I hope I have stories how we are preventing crimes. I can tell you stories. I have no scientific way to show that. But I feel that's a normal idea. If we can be sure that any leader in the world who commit crimes, massive crimes, because that's what we are doing, we're not investigating few tortures. We're investigating massive atrocities, hundreds or thousands of people killed. So we have to be sure that any leader in the world who think that he can gain power killing people has to know that he will lose power. If they know that, there will be no more atrocities. So we'll do that.
And what are the conditions under which one can be arrested? Does the person have to be on the soil of a signatory to the Rome Statute? Or does it have to have been referred by the UN? What are the conditions under which?
No. There are two different issues. We start cases for the crime has to occur in the territory of a national state party. So I can start investigation for crimes committed in the territory of state parties. But to arrest individual is different. the non-entity party could accept to arrest individuals. In fact, the Sudan accept to arrest Joseph Kony, for instance. So, but yes, the court is a global court, but respect national sovereignty. That is the beauty of the system, because the problem is we have global communication, global economy, no global institutions. And when you think, why is not possible that you have a war between Alabama and Massachusetts? You had a war on this, but no more, because you have institutions. When the Berlin Wall fell, Helmut Kohl went to NATO, and he said, I'm aware I'm sit on the chair of Hitler. However, in Europe, no one has fear today that there will be a war between Germany and France, because you have institutions. So we need institutions to manage violence. And the ICC is exactly that. It's a global institution with a limited mandate to prevent this type of crimes. That's what we are doing.
It's a global institution, but not all countries have signed on to the Rome Statute. What is the meaning of that, and how important is it to ultimately...
It's just the beginning. I believe very important, but it will take time. It will take 20, 30 years. We are progressing. In 1998, U.S. refused to sign the treaty because the prosecutor has independent power to initiate cases. 2 weeks ago, I started my first investigation. I triggered myself, the jurisdiction of the court, independently, and the U.S. ambassador for war crimes was saying to Kenya, yes, you have to support the prosecutor. So things change. Things are changing. So I think it's a process. My job is to do the right cases in the right way, with strong evidence and respecting the law. And then if it's working, normally it's difficult to be against justice for the genocide, no?
When it came to the trial of Bashir, the arrest of Bashir, your charge was a charge of genocide.
Two of the charges, well, 10 charges. 5 crimes against humanity, 2 war crimes, and 3 genocide.
And the court rejected the concept of genocide.
The pretrial chamber, it was a 2-1 decision. 2 judges rejected, 1 accepted. So I appeal. I'm in the appeal chamber.
Is that the process you're in right now?
Yeah, yeah.
But did they find Bashir, Sudanese President Bashir, guilty of other crimes?
Arrest warrant. It's just the process. It's the beginning of the process.
Okay.
Arrest warrant for 5 crimes against humanity, including extermination in the camps, and for 2 war crimes.
And this questioner asks, what are the 3 ways that the international community can help you in your efforts to carry out this particular
3 ways?
Case? Yes.
3 ways?
Well, you could offer 4.
No, there are many ways to cooperate, and each of you will know. I think educating kids is something we have to focus. Arresting Bashir would be good too. Providing food and medicine to the 2.5 million person in Sudan would be great. Basically, let me explain the Darfur case. In Darfur, it was a rebellion in 2002. Bashir was negotiating with the rebels, and he even released some leaders from the jail. However, the negotiation collapsed, and the rebels took the airport in El-Fashir and destroyed half of the air force. And this attack was led by some of the leaders who were in jail. The Bashir reaction was order a military attack against the village, because for them, they say, as soon as there is one rebel in a village, the village became military target, because they feel all them are full. And he appointed Minister Haroun as the coordinator of the activities in Darfur. When Minister Haroun went to Darfur, the Fur leaders, Fur is a tribe from Darfur, met him and said, we are very happy you came here, we need your help. We are under attack. And the Minister Haroun said, you don't understand. You are my enemy. I will destroy you. And that's why they need someone from outside. Imagine if you go to the police barrack to say, look, yesterday someone came to my office and raped my daughter. And they say, yes, we did it. And we do it again next week. What do you do? That's what happened with the Darfur people. And there are 2.5 million in camps. So what Bashir is doing, for 2 years, he was attacking them in the villages. He displaced 4 million people, killing and raping, basically. But in a way, one of the witnesses told us, they came to my house, they raped my daughter, they raped my wife, but the worst, they forced me to see, to watch, when they were raping my daughter, 8-year-old daughter. I was asking why. So that's what they did. And then they forced the displacement of 4 million people, 2.5 million in the camps, and they were thinking they will die because they had no food, no water. So the international community came to provide humanitarian assistance, and what they are doing is they were hindering the humanitarian assistance to like a slow death. And after the arrest warrant was issued by the judges, President Bashir confirmed his intention, expelling the humanitarian assistance, and now they are saying they will send these people back to their own land, but their own land had no more water, and they will be killed. So it will be a new crime. So that's the situation. And, yeah.
There are those, I mean, this decision to issue a warrant for his arrest was controversial.
Everything I do is controversial.
And you're either going too far or not far enough, right? Isn't that your job description?
No, the problem is we are applying the law in a world with no consensus. When you apply, a prosecutor in San Francisco has not the problem, oh, we believe we don't like you here. These killings are our killings. This is not happening. You have a community with clarity on that. And this is not happening yet. And the problem is, the world is organized on the basis of national states, and then it's complicated for the other states to intervene. And in particular, the Darfuri has no oil, nothing to give. So no one is like a Cherokee who has interest on them. No one. So that's part of the problem. And that's why... basically, this is a new idea. When I receive the Darfur case... People say, oh, prosecutor, you have to invent something to refuse this because it's a poison gift. You will be irrelevant in Darfur. So I did my case against the Minister Haroun, and it was an opportunity to force Bashir to send Haroun to The Hague and stop the crimes. But the negotiators normally are trying to appease the criminals, and they offer him other better alternatives. Bashir for 3 months was evaluating to give me Haroun. At the end, say no, I cannot hand over Haroun because he was doing what I ordered. So what I can do? I am a prosecutor. He's publicly saying he gave the orders. I collect evidence. I confirm he gave the orders. I try to be clear that I will follow the next case will be those who provide orders to Benitez Haroun. And what I can do, what I should do. The problem is, yes, people, for instance, humanitarian assistance is very important. They keep the people alive. But you cannot just keep the... Angelina Jolie came to my office, and she said to me, I was in 27 camps for refugees. They need our help. But what I see is not enough to provide food. No one is working on the roots of the conflict. And that's why I tend to see what you can do, because I believe this could be a solution. So that's what to do. Because if not, those who provide humanitarian assistance just provide humanitarian assistance. You know, the Red Cross went to Auschwitz. They inspect Auschwitz, and they recommend to improve the shower system. Because they were not focusing on this. So they say, oh, the shower system is not working very well. So that's why, yes, we need humanitarian assistance. But yes, also we need justice. And because it's so new, we need to integrate better.
The concern was, as you point to, this or some feeling that the arrest warrant led to the ejection of the humanitarian workers. But the other concern was the traditional peace and justice argument. And that was the worry that the moment that arrest warrant was issued, the motivation on the part of rebel leaders to come to the negotiating table was eliminated. What do you say to that argument? And can you describe for those in the audience that argument that there is a trade-off between peace and justice?
No, I cannot, in fact, because I don't believe it. First, I'm the prosecutor. The decision to do investigation in this case is not by me. It's a decision first adopted by a state who adopted this treaty. And they concluded that appeasing the criminal was not working with Hitler. You know the famous line, Prime Minister of UK, Chamberlain, make an agreement with Hitler in Munich, and he say, I shake the hand of this man, I saw his eyes, he's a man that you can trust, and Britons can sleep well. Yeah. So people learn that this is not working, and that's why they adopted this law. As a prosecutor, I cannot make other than I have to apply the law. It's like if you are a referee in a tennis game, you cannot decide, oh, the ball was out, but he's my friend, he needed some, it's a moment, he's depressed, so in. I cannot do that. So they gave me a mission, I had to do the mission, and that's what I think. In addition to that, I think they are right. In addition to, so I do it because it's the law, but in addition to that, in the Bashir case, for instance, they started the negotiation because I did Harun, and then the Sudanese were trying to offer a negotiation. And in June 2008, when I was going to present my Bashir case, the negotiators resigned because they got nothing. And today, Bashir is indicted, and there is a peace process. There is a negotiation. So that's why these comments are false. But people talk. What can I do?
This questioner is a Darfuri who lives in the United States.
Yes.
And asks whether the U.S. government has been helpful in providing intelligence in this case.
No, I received zero intelligence. No. But the U.S., the pen of the special envoy, when Nazio was the special envoy, he was very soft and to appease Bashir, trying to make an agreement with him. Then was appointed Richard Williams, who was an ambassador. In fact, when I request the arrest warrant against Bashir, Nazio was saying that I would destroy any possibility to deploy UNAMID, the peacekeepers. And in fact, was on the contrary. Richard Williams, on the new special envoy, was very tough in the negotiation, and under his time, 65% of UNAMID was deployed. So this forecast was wrong. So there's a group of mediators in Geneva who did the analysis of the success of the mediation. 85% of the attempt to mediate conflict fail and never reach an agreement. And those who reach an agreement, 60% never are implemented. So the rate of success is around 6%. So imagine if you have to do the surgery, 6% chances. Okay, maybe you do it, but it could not be the only choice. So we need peace, peace negotiation. We need humanitarian assistance, but we need to respect the law. That is a new concept.
Let me take you to the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yes.
And if you would describe that case for us. My understanding is that the charge is the employment of child soldiers.
Yes.
In these, say something about the
child
charge.
Soldiers. Imagine they're playing football, they're abducted, and they are educated that this is the bullet, this is the weapon you have, and you have to clean your weapons, and if you lose a bullet, you receive 250 bits. And if your fellow soldier lost a bullet, you had to beat your fellow soldier. And if you're a girl, the girls also cook and are sex slaves. And if the girls refuse to be raped, you can also beat them. Imagine the education for these kids. And they did it for thousands of kids. That's why, yes, my first case is about child soldiers, because I believe this is one of the most serious crimes. No future if the children became soldiers. That's why I'm doing this case.
And why has the court not focused on, in particular, gender-based violence, which has been so extraordinary in DRC?
This is another false allegation. In the child soldier case, we present exactly the gender aspect of the child soldiers. The girl soldiers were cook, soldiers, and sex slaves. Then we have, in Bemba case, in Katanga case, rape as a war crime. In Joseph Kony case, rape as a crime against humanity. Joseph Kony was abducting not one girl, was abducting entire schools of girls, selecting the most beautiful girl as wife. And he did not just one, he did at least five times. Five times abducting entire schools to transform the girls in sex slaves. And then in Darfur, we allege that the rapes is the way to commit genocide. So we have gender crimes in all our cases. And in fact, my special gender advisor is Catherine MacKinnon, who I don't know if you know her. She's the founder of this idea. So people talk.
We've focused on two Africa cases. Say something about the number of African countries that have signed on to the court.
Another criticism is that we are focused in Africa, we have a bias in Africa. That is basically Bashir propaganda. Bashir is saying that. And yes, in Rwanda, people were, it's a serious criticism that we ignore the victims of Rwanda. All my criminals in jail are Africans, but all my victims are Africans. So I had to choose side, the criminals, African criminals, or protect African victims.
What I meant was this evening we've talked about, too. Say something about what countries have signed on and what countries
have
not.
I'll show you the map.
Because it's striking to me that I think half of the countries are African countries.
No, not half. It's 25%.
25% have signed on.
Yes, all South America. But the issue is the following. The crimes, there are three, you see the map, there are three regions who led. Europe, West Europe, is all the Europe, West Europe is there. South America and Africa, non-Arab Africa. In Europe, in all the three regions, there were crimes of this type. But in Europe, happened 6 years ago. Now it's just the Balkans or Georgia, marginal. In South America, happened 20 years ago. Now it's just Colombia, marginal. In Africa, happened now. That's why we're in Africa, because they need us now. And that's why we're working in Africa. And of course, in Africa, there are leaders who are trying to stop the crimes and leaders who are committing the crimes. And those who are committing the crimes pretend that we are colonialists because we are not letting them to kill Africans. Guys, you cannot kill Africans.
I have three question cards regarding Palestine.
Okay.
And one asks, what are the next steps for the Goldstone report, Judge Goldstone's report, in terms of the claims of war crimes committed by Israelis in Gaza?
And Hamas, both.
Sorry?
And Hamas.
And Hamas, both. Yes, I'm sorry. Israelis and Hamas.
So this is the question.
The question is, what are the next steps?
No, the issue is the following. The last conflict in Gaza created a lot of controversies. And then what happened is the Palestinian Authority came to my office accepting jurisdiction for Palestine. And it's a very controversial legal issue because the law say a state can accept jurisdiction. So can Palestine accept jurisdiction? And they are doing, they say, I will produce a report to you. And the report is basically, they came a month ago, and basically, I don't know if it's a legal argument. They say, we can give jurisdiction to you because we have criminal jurisdiction. We don't need to discuss with you if we are a state or not a state. This is a controversial issue. But it's clear that we have criminal jurisdiction, so we can transfer to you what we have. And my comment is, okay, but according to the Oslo Treaty, you have jurisdiction in Palestine, but not to prosecute Israeli people. You cannot prosecute Israeli people. So how you can give me jurisdiction when you have no jurisdiction on Israel people? And they say, but this is exactly confirming, because we gave an exception, confirming that we have jurisdiction, and we produce an exception. So I say, okay, but if you produce an exception, how you can transfer me this exception? And they say, because we are unable to do it because we did the exception. But the Israelis now are unwilling to implement, and then you have to intervene. So this is the argument they are doing. And they are promising me to come, they asked me to wait for any decision to come with new arguments. My duty is to wait and make a decision. I'm not promising them, I told them, look, I can promise just we'll apply the law, that's it. But in the meantime, they had to do is, what happened is there's a strong request to do investigations there. And Goldstone report, Goldstone is the first prosecutor from the Yugoslavia Tribunal. He's a judge from the Supreme Court in South Africa, and he's Jewish. And that's why I always say, I'm a public servant. I am a bureaucrat. When the Palestinians came to my office, I had to receive them, and I had to listen to them. Richard Goldstone was a private citizen, and he jumped on this, knowing that will be a lot of controversies. So he produced this report for the UN Council of Human Rights, and now it's a huge debate about this. But the consensus is it should be national investigation. So now the issue is in the General Assembly of the UN is asking a report on February to see who is conducting this investigation. So this is a pending issue. It's a huge debate in which everyone is frustrated because Israelis feel it's wrong. They are defending themselves. They are doing nothing wrong. Palestinians say they are the victim of this. Someone had to do justice here. So we'll see.
Several of the questioners ask about U.S. participation, noting that the United States initially championed the notion of the ICC and then didn't sign and ratify the statute. What do you think the prospects are that that will change, that the U.S. will
You have to ask them. You're an American citizen. I'm not. So I'm just a global prosecutor. Whoever ratified the treaty, it's a party. If not, it's okay. I'm working not in party. In fact, what is happening is I'm working with China, with Russia, with U.S., non state parties who are engaged with the court. So I think it's a process. The big countries have the armies to protect themselves. So the law is a weapon for the weak people, not for the strong people, not for strong countries. So it's normal in some way. The big countries are not inside, and also they have more fear because they have soldiers around the world. So I think in 20 years, everyone will be in the court. But today, still debating.
Of the reasons that have been offered, this questioner asked, the reasons that have been offered for not joining the ICC by the United States, do you think that any of them has merit? What is your response to them?
They were talking about an accountable prosecutor. That probably is right. Now, look, this is an issue that the U.S. has to decide. I just selected the case I had to select and investigate the case. This is my job. If I do my job properly and the court work properly, probably in 20 years, all the world will be part of the court. It's a matter of... In 10 years, I saw a huge change. I suppose in 20 years, everyone will be in the court. In fact, China says we are a state party, a non-state party partner. Russia is providing us communication about Georgia. And U.S. is cooperating with us in some of the cases. So we have relations with even the biggest countries who are non-member.
Are there conditions under which you could imagine the ICC bringing charges against American leaders? Were they? I'm saying for...
There are two conditions. In Afghanistan. Afghanistan is a state party. So I cannot investigate crimes allegations committed in Iraq. But in Afghanistan, I can, because Afghanistan is a party. But there are two conditions. First, American troops have to commit crimes. Second, American justice system has to refuse to investigate the crimes. As soon as the American justice system investigate the crimes, I should do nothing.
Does that mean the civilian justice system or
no.
Could the military?
Normally, depends who is the criminal, but if normally the allegations are against members of the army, normally we investigate the military justice system, and it's okay.
It's okay. We have one questioner who asks whether there should be an international tribunal for the detainees in Guantanamo. What your opinion is?
No opinion.
A man without opinion.
No. Yes. Yes. Very, very prudent. No. It's not my business. It's really not my business.
One of our questioners asks, who's a student. Ask what advice you would lend to a recent college graduate, so this person has just graduated, who would like to begin an internship in the ICC.
Had to go to the web and apply.
Another questioner asked whether you hire American prosecutors, and if so, where to apply.
Again, it's the web, but my first prosecutor was Christine Chang, an American prosecutor from Manhattan. She left now, 1 year ago, 2 years ago. But my current coordinator of prosecution is an American lawyer who was the appeal lawyer in the Attorney General office in Washington. And my coordinator of investigation is Chuck Smith from Brooklyn, the Brooklyn prosecutor office.
This is an Argentinian in the audience who asked the question, a personal question, and that is, what made you pursue your career? What made you decide to become a prosecutor to begin with, and a prosecutor of war crimes ultimately? What was your main motivation?
No, basically it was an offer. In both cases, they offered me to be the prosecutor in the Junta trials. I cannot refuse that because I think nothing could be better for me in those days.
At what age?
32. I was 32. And then when I was 51, I was walking in Buenos Aires and received a phone call. There's an ambassador asking me, telling me that my name was in the list to be prosecuted at ICC, and my name was in the top of the list, but they don't know if I want the job. So in those cases, it was difficult to say no.
You noted that your mother disagreed with you. Did the junta have great legitimacy at the time? Or was it just your mother who was the outlier?
No, in the elite, normally, at the beginning, when they started, they have full legitimacy. Everyone supported them, in fact. But then the economy was bad, and they went to the Falkland-Malvinas War. They were defeated, so normally when you are defeated, your popularity is going down. And then they were not very popular. But however, many, many people were thinking, that my mother, they were protecting them. Yeah, that's why. That's the point. My point of my mother is, when this crime happened, you are working with deeply divided societies, no? And then that's why the law is not important. I remember a discussion with a general in my country. He said to me, he was furious with me, and then we had a conversation. Complicated. I told him, general, I cannot accept that you torture and kill to protect freedom and democracy. And he said, but these, freedom and democracy, are our values, and they are the enemy. And that is something that also can happen not in other places, maybe, no? And this is normal thinking. The enemies are, we can do whatever against them. And that's the concept, because you are always also the enemy of them. If they are your enemies, you are the enemy of them, and then they also can kill you. And that's the concept. In the legal system, there is no enemy, no friend. They are citizens and maybe people who commit crimes. And that's the way, in fact, I believe in that. I believe the legal system is a way to live together. It's because people talk about reconciliation. Reconciliation is a moral value. But if someone raped my daughter, I cannot be forced to reconciliate with the rapist. But in the legal system, I can be forced not to kill the rapist. And that's why the law is a system to protect us. And that's why the Hiroshima concept, to have a global system to protect everyone, is the concept we need to develop. But it's complicated because, okay, you trust more your country, your government, than the world, no? The kids were not, say, yeah, no, very they cannot trust in UN, for instance. So it's complicated to trust in the world.
Robert McNamara, former Secretary of Defense, Robert McNamara, is famous for having said that had we not won World War II, we would have been seen as war criminals for the strategic bombing of Dresden and other German cities. And you're showing the film of Hiroshima would suggest that the definition of what is a war crime falls with the victor.
It was Nuremberg charges. In Nuremberg, you just did some part of the victor justice. For instance, in Nuremberg were not rapes. And the reason was is because the Russians were raping thousands of people in Berlin, but they were in part of the panel. And of course, you cannot prosecute Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But the court is not the same. The court, I have no armies, so it's not victor justice. It's justice. That's the difference.
I mean, I think we're saying the same thing. Is what I'm trying to get a sense of is the ways in which the International Criminal Court can build a norm.
Yes.
That may not have otherwise existed.
No, on this I fully agree. In fact, that's the point. In NATO, for instance, NATO intervention in the Balkans was complicated, and for months. The Yugoslavia prosecutor was thinking to investigate NATO, was to prosecute NATO, and that would have a huge change in NATO. So now it's a new complying with the rules. Yes, it's an evolution. I don't think you can produce Hiroshima and Nagasaki again. So things are changing. Yes.
We have three different question cards regarding Iran. Uh-huh. And asking whether there is recourse for people in Iran who feel that they have been victims of political crimes.
But again, Iran is not a state party, so I can say nothing about Iran.
And another questioner asks about Kenya and asks that you talk a little bit about the investigation, who are the parties, who are the leaders. Is there a Kenya investigation that is ongoing?
Kenya is an investigation. I request to open. It's not yet open.
It's because not yet open.
The chamber has, the judge has authorized me to do it.
And describe the parties. This is for the post-election conflict?
In Kenya, it was an election in 2007 at the end, and when the authorities informed that President Kibaki was re-elected, violence started, promoted by some of the leaders of the opposite party, and then for 40 days, both parties were promoting killings and rapes and massive violence. And was the intervention of, you see, sometimes a good mediator could make a big difference, because Kofi Annan was appointed African Union mediator, and he basically was supported by other African leaders, bring both political leaders to the table of negotiation, and they took leadership, and they agreed to form a coalition government with the two candidates. One, President Kibaki, became the president, but the other candidate, Odinga, became the prime minister. And this stopped the crimes. The issue is, everyone has the fear that will be, without justice, will be again crimes in the next election, which is 2012. Because in fact, in the last 20 years in Kenya, during the election time, they have violence. No one, never so much. But they had an investigation conducted by a commission. But after that, they were discussing to establish a court for this, but they did not succeed. So I went to see them to inform them my duty to open the investigation. And I am independent part of the Kenyan justice system. And I told them, look, you are a coalition government. Now it's even a bigger coalition to support your effort to do justice to prevent crimes. And both leaders were in agreement and committed to support. So I started my investigation. I request to start the investigation 2 weeks ago.
And what will it take to take Burma, Myanmar, will the Security Council
Act
on that case?
That's the point. Burma, Myanmar, as Iraq, as Zimbabwe, and Lebanon are not a state party, so I cannot intervene there. I'm not a world prosecutor. I'm a prosecutor of 110 states who trust me to do this.
But if the Security Council were to refer...
Yes. The alternative is Security Council, who has a role in peace and security in the world, can refer any case in the world to me, as they did in Darfur.
Now, you've been criticized sometimes for being too flamboyant.
You read very well my criticism, yes.
Too much. you also get praised, I should note. But that is one of the criticisms. Is that part of the role of a prosecutor?
I'm the one who say that. I don't know. I'm the one who say that. I don't care. I focus. I can't spend to do the crimes in Darfur.
I think here's the question. The question is, to what is the relationship between style and results?
I don't know style. I focus on results. I'm doing justice for people in Darfur, in Congo, in Uganda, in the country who they are not receiving justice. So you can criticize my cases. You can tell what... I never will defend myself personally. I know when you are prosecuting these type of cases, you are under attack. In fact, I don't know if you know, the first prosecutor of these type of crimes was John Cook in England 350 years ago. He was the prosecutor of Charles I. Charles I was prosecuted because he was promoting the killing of his own people. And then they appointed this lawyer, John Cook, who became the prosecutor. And then Charles I was executed. The problem for John Cook was 10 years later, Charles II, the son of Charles I, was appointed the king. And then they prosecuted the prosecutor. And the prosecutor say, I did nothing in this case, I just was the prosecutor. And the judge considered this an aggravant and convicted the prosecutor to be executed in the courtroom, and they hung up him there. So life of the prosecutor who deal with Pagwell is complicated. So you are heavily criticized or heavily supported, both, and you have to ignore both and keep your focus in the crimes and in your job. That is so they can tell to me about whatever, I don't care.
You are the founder of something called Transparent Markets. Tell us about that. What is its model?
No, I was working on corruption, because in Argentina, after I prosecuted the military for 4 years, I saw the new democracy was not killing us, but they were stealing us. I say we are evolving. The government is not killing us. Now we are just stealing us. It's better. But corruption was a big problem, so I was working on corruption issues. And then I learned corruption is not enough to control from the justice system, so I put my money and created a company and to basically provide the information and transparency to the public tenders. That was an idea. My wife always complaining because I lost a lot of money, but it's still working, the company, still doing more transparency, but we lost a lot of money. But it was a good idea.
As you look back on your career, what are the greatest moments of pride and what are the disappointments?
No, I live in a crazy country, Argentina. That's why I was prosecuted in a case against journalists who killed its own people, their own people. But I have an incredible... I was incredibly lucky to have these offers, to have these activities. I feel very happy. I feel it's a privilege.
Please join me in thanking...
You have to help her to work in the school. That is the commitment you have. So because you came here, you have to do something for the schools with her, okay?